Okay.
Good evening, everybody. I came in a little early tonight on this, and I caught these guys down third playing Shopska. And when Dan saw me, he grabbed the guitar and started rehearsing a song. I have a couple of weeks, I think. I wish to talk about biblical characters, particularly Moses. Now, up to now, a lot has been said about Moses, and a lot of good things, and a lot of important things. But I want to focus on Moses' life. It is an incredible life, isn't it? It takes up Exodus, right? And he's there in Leviticus, and Numbers, Deuteronomy. A lot of attention is paid to him, and as well as to David. And when we look at, for example, Hebrews chapter 11, the life of faith, there are many, many things for us to learn. Everything the people in Hebrews 11 who I talked about, everything they did was by faith. It means that there was more than just natural ability. It means there was more than just a normal education or background or temperament. It means that the element of faith was in their life. And tonight, I'd like to talk a little bit about how this works. Particularly, there's a number of things said about Moses, and they'll help us understand sort of, I don't want to say stages, but the progression of faith, how faith may work in our life. Right? A life of faith doesn't just come out of nowhere. We do not decide one day, I want God to use me, and now I give myself to God, and I expect him to start using me. It doesn't just pop into our minds. It's a result of seeing God's possibilities in our lives. It's a result of you and I thinking about God, knowing his word, and as we know his word and understand his purposes, we begin to see the possibility that God can use us. And then we have to start learning what process God uses to bring us to the place where we can be an instrument to him. So this is important, because when we see God's word and understand it, gradually things come to our mind. What am I going to do with this? What can I do with this? Is there anything that different I can be and do? And that's how it works. And that's how it worked in Moses' life, right? Now, in Exodus chapter 7, it talks about It talks about Moses and his wife. And they have this little baby, you know the story. And they saw this child, and when they saw the child, it was a beautiful child, and she hid him. Skyler English, in his commentary on Hebrews, particularly chapter 11, says that this idea is more than just saying, boy, he's a good-looking kid, and I've got to take care of him. He's a good-looking kid, and we don't want him to be killed by Pharaoh. There was something about him that God communicated to them. And God has done that through the scriptures and people's lives. And they saw this baby, and something told them that God was in his life and that perhaps God would be using him. We are close to the end of the 400 years of Joseph's family being in Egypt. And after 400 years, God is going to release them. He's going to let them go. Meanwhile, they're in slavery. And I'm sure Moses' parents were aware of the timing of this and the generation that had passed and where they were. And there's a sense that they have that God is going to do something. And I believe that. So parents had faith. In the beginning, when it said that she conceived, Exodus chapter 2, and that the son, and she took, and she hid him and nursed him, things. It was, in the beginning, their faith. Nothing about Moses' faith. He was a baby, and he had the, he was raised by them for a while. What a marvelous miracle, isn't it? That this boy who wasn't killed and was let go, sort of abandoned, is now back in the home for a short period of time with his parents. And there's no doubt that they're telling him the story. They're telling Moses the story about Abraham and Isaac, Jacob and the land, and Joseph, and they're telling him these stories. And they're probably sharing with him the excitement that one day they will be released and have a land of their own. And that this will be a place where God will be glorified, and a place where they can worship. And it's part of God's plan. And from that will come a Messiah, a ruler. And so they no doubt tell this child for however long they could keep him. The process of weaning a child is longer in some cultures. Among the Indians that I worked with in Colombia, was a long time, well more than a year. And they taught him. So Moses is learning things. And he's also, we know, raised in Pharaoh's palace. And we get the idea that when he went there, he was given the best education, that he was catered to, that he was taught the modern things of the time, that he was learning the most up-to-date things on building and leadership and whatever. So Moses was well educated. And so when he's raised there, he's raised in this other environment. But he has story, things that have been told to him, things about God and the people. And as Moses is, I'm sure, over the years looking at this and seeing the people suffer and seeing what Egypt was doing, Moses is thinking, and I'd like to believe that it comes to a time where he's thinking, maybe I can do something about this. I mean, after all, I am Hebrew, and I've been raised in Pharaoh's palace, and all these advantages have been given to me. I'm a leader. I have some military experience. I'm a builder. And maybe I can do this. Maybe I have some way of getting it done. What I'm saying is that he begins to see the possibility that God could take this and use him to be that person that would be involved in freeing Egypt from Israel from Egypt. All right. So when Moses began, he began to start to see that he could do something and be part of God's future. He began to take it to heart, but it led to some life-changing decisions. Now, this is something I want to show. When you begin to see the possibility that you can be used beyond our daily living and sin, beyond now, this faith is for everybody. When you begin to see you can become part of this greater program, you start making decisions. You begin to understand what's involved. I want to read some verses outside of Exodus, but you begin to understand what's involved, and you can see, okay, what happened to Moses, and how Moses was able to make decisions, but he wasn't ready. So we'll look at this. And so in chapter 2:11, it says, it came to pass in those days when Moses was grown, that he went out to his brethren, and looked at their burdens, and he saw an Egyptian being a Hebrew, one of his brethren. And he looked this way and that way, and when he saw no one, he killed the Egyptian and hid him in the sand. Okay. Moses is doing something about it. He feels like it's time now. And when he went out on the second day, behold, verse 13, two Hebrew men were fighting, and he said to the one who did wrong, "Why are you striking your companion?" And he said, "Who made you a prince and judge over us? Do you intend to kill us as you killed the Egyptian?" So Moses feared. Word is out. People have seen. And they're not rallying to my leadership. They're not rallying to my vision. They're not rallying to my goal. They actually see me as having done something wrong, not right. So Moses fled from the face. This is verse 15. Face of Pharaoh, dwelt in the land of Midian, and sat down by a well. Now, you know the story, but this is it quickly in a nutshell. Now, let's go to Hebrews chapter 11. There are quite a few little references in the New Testament about this. Right? So Hebrews chapter 11. And we'll start at verse 11:23. Now come with me there. By faith, Moses, when he was born, hid for 3 months by his parents because he thought he was a beautiful child and they were not afraid of the king. Well, that wasn't Moses' faith. It was his parents' faith. Up to that time, he's too small to exercise faith. All right. Verse 24, by faith Moses, when he became of age, refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter, choosing rather to suffer affliction with the people of God than to enjoy the passing pleasures of sin, esteeming the reproach of Christ greater riches than the treasures of Egypt, for he looked at the reward. You see the decision when Moses began to see, and Moses began to understand some things about God and his program. When he became of age, he decided, number one, he wasn't going to perhaps stay in the palace, become the son of Pharaoh's daughter, maybe, who knows, but this is something. I want to identify with needy people. And yet it wasn't fully clear to him about it because it says, choosing rather to suffer affliction with the people of God to enjoy the passing pleasure of sin. Now, this may not all be in a chronological order, but the writer is telling us the various things that happen. I'm not going to identify. Number two, I want to be involved in this, and I don't care how hard it is, I want to be involved. I know that they've suffered, and they may suffer, and I want to be part of it. In other words, looking at things around them and deciding. Okay, and then in verse 25, besides suffering with the people of God, to enjoy the passing pleasures of sin, esteeming the reproaches of Christ, greater riches than the treasures of Egypt, for he looked to reward. Right? So Moses was beginning to understand some things. And he saw that he was going to have to make a huge decision. And those decisions we make in a life of faith, no matter where we are, whether we're at home or business or wanting to go to the mission field, those decisions are not always easy because those decisions demand change. They're asking for us to make some decisions about what we're going to do, how we're going to give our lives. And this is important when you think about the men who were killed in Ecuador. And every year we remember them, and we talk about the possibilities of their profession and their career and what they might have accomplished and what they gave up. I wonder if when they're out there, if they really thought much about what they gave up. The reason is because they made a decision to do something that already rattled people. So when people make this kind of decision, it very often is just something that they want to do. And if you ask them, they might not, oh, I gave up on it. They might say, I used to be a principal of a high school, or I used to be this, and that's it. So these are some things that are important. And these men, I mean, one could have been supposedly a well-known lawyer. We don't have any idea if he could have been, but he could have been a well-known lawyer. He apparently, Ed apparently put that in focus. See, that was an easy decision. When we celebrate, but we remember their death, there's a letter in the files in one of the magazines. And it talks about Ed walking home one morning. He was working in a motel on Highway 100. And I know those days, Highway 100 was a racetrack. That's where everybody went to burn the carbon out of their car. So it was a racetrack, but there was a motel there. And he talks about walking home, and he's walking to the parkway. I'm sure it's over here at Hanson and stuff with a little golf course. And he's thinking this through, and the decision is irrevocable. He's thought it. This is what he's going to do. And he started doing something about it. And he went to Marquette and told him what he was going to do. He had told his parents. And it made a change. But I don't think he's out there feeling miserable. Oh, what I get. It's a decision. Pete Fleming, a professor in a university, and working with students and inter-varsity and such things. I don't think they went to bed every night thinking about, boy, won't we give up? When you make that decision, it's invigorating. And what you're doing when you make that decision, you're saying to God, you are in control. You take it and use this offer. Now, we don't know much about Roger Darien. He's the one guy who's forgotten. I know enough about him because I knew his daughter was married to Dan, and I've met Bard many times. And Roger was a paratrooper in World War II at the Battle of the Bulge. If you know anything about that battle, it was one of Hitler's last major efforts to weaken the Allies. He won a medal as a paratrooper. But he was supposed to come home and take over his dad's ranch and inherit the ranch and become a rancher, work with his dad until his father couldn't work anymore. And Barb told me that when he told his father this, it created the same kind of problem it created with Theo McCulley and the Flint. Why? You could do so much. I'm not belittling these other men at all. I'm just simply saying that's what it was. And Roger Darien had a nice world open up before him. And he had a medal. And he was kind of a hero in the end. By the way, Lewistown and the ranch is really close to where Jeff lived, just a jaunt down the road. Jeff used to have a Bible study. Lewistown. So the people there so know about it. So my point is, the decision makes a change. But there's something about it. The decision mean we have to start thinking and getting closer to God. This is where the problem comes in. You know it, and I know. And what the problem was is this. Moses had to be taught me. He had to be ready. It's one thing to want to do something. It's one thing to say, God, do it. And when you say that, okay, I'm in charge of your circumstances. I will work in such a way that you learn the things that are necessary to serve me and to honor me with people. And that could be for elders or anybody. So meekness is the primary qualification with serving God or any success for doing God's will. Because a sense of our own weakness is necessary. 2 Corinthians 12:9. For my strength is made perfect in me. So this first stage of Moses' life is teaching him about God, bringing him to a place where Moses sees the possibility, and then making some decisions that are really important. And after you make those decisions, God still has something to teach us. One thing for sure, God's not going to go forth and put a stamp on somebody who's going in their own strength. Somebody who's going in their own strength, and this is how it's going to be done, and I can do it. I don't believe that. I haven't believed that since I've been a young missionary. And so he will not go forth with a man who marches in his own strength. Those who serve God must serve him in God's own way. So there's something for Moses to learn, all right? And this is what God wants to do. Now, what we know, Zechariah 4:6 says, that it's not by might nor by my power, but by my spirit, saith the Lord. All right? So it is not by might or power, my spirit. And it's interesting what the Spirit can do to a lot of crude people, a lot of people who would not really be qualified for a whole lot. And a lot of people who would get lost in the shuffle until they began to think about what God could do. So this is what God has to teach Moses in his first day. If you're upset about your weakness, if you're upset about your apparent weakness and you don't have much to offer, don't be. Give yourself to God and let him help you and teach. All right, so I must go on, okay? But these are some things that are really important for the introduction. Moses has to be ready. First, you need the thought. You need the desire. And bring them together. And then God does things for you. And it's interesting, in Numbers 12:3, it says, Moses was the meekest man above all men upon the face of the earth. Interesting, isn't it? Meekest man above all men on the face of the earth. But if you look at Moses' life, you'll find that Moses was the rashest, might be the biggest hothead. Well, I shouldn't use that because that isn't right to say about saints. No saints are hotheads, okay? The biggest hothead, okay? And he was not very meek. Next week, when I start talking about the time in the desert, leadership, Moses' leadership, and all that involved, you'll see that Moses has a temper and it has to be dealt with. And you know about that being the reason he could not enter into the promised land. But God's in his life, all right? So 40 more years have to be written before Moses can be the one who will be part of freeing. Okay, so in Hebrews we have this 11:23, and the passing pleasure of sin. And this is what it says about Moses. Now there's more here. Let's go to Acts chapter 7:17. Running out of gas here. I need that little coffee. Acts 7:17. Okay. But when the time of promise grew near, which God had sworn to Abraham, the people grew and multiplied in Egypt. Till another king arose who did not know Joseph. There are what are called maybe the shepherd kings, and it says in Genesis 46 that the Egyptian hated shepherds. I don't know that part. But another one came up who didn't know, who didn't understand, and so the Israelites were just seen as pure slaves and everything. No history, no remembrance of it. All right. Verse 20, at this time Moses was born and was well pleasing to God and was brought up in his father's house. But when he was set out, Pharaoh's daughter took him away and brought him to his own. And Moses, verse 22, was learned in all the wisdom of the Egyptians and was mighty in words and deeds. But when he was 40 years old, it came to his heart to visit his brethren, the children of Israel. And seeing one of them suffer wrong, he defended and avenged him who was oppressed and struck him down. Here is Moses' problem. And this is interesting to me. Here's his problem. Said, and struck him down. Verse 25, for he supposed that his brethren would have understood that God would deliver them by his hand. He just took for granted. They saw his leadership. He's the one. He assumed a lot in the, I have to say this, okay? Let me get it done. In the movie, Singing in the Rain. You remember that movie? Donald O'Connor and Gene Kelly are dancing in the speech studio, and they're singing Moses Supposes Erroneously. Okay, and I hurt the picture. I touched something on the mouse. A choke. What a dummy.
We can still do it. Fine. So
he's got it.
Sorry. I'm moving my hand and I hit my mouse. All right. So I often went, really, the author of that, writer of that song, Moses supposes erroneously, was a Jewish writer. But whatever it is, Moses thought that everybody would understand his ideas, his views, his dedication, his desire to serve, that he was the one. And Moses did know that God has to do a lot of work. These people, they didn't want anything to do with him. He's not the guy. And so, I like this because it's assumptions that we make are often wrong. And allow me to mention a few things here. Okay. Now, I lost the picture here. It's supposed to be page 3 of page 8. sorry. It appears to me that Moses didn't quite understand how God works. He thinks he's ready. He's got the right education, the right idea. But Moses' attempt at deliverance really came largely from human sympathy. These people are suffering. I'm going to help them. I got to free them from the suffering. I got to keep the Egyptians from harming them. It sprang mostly from human sympathy. Human sympathy is not a reason to be a missionary or to be involved in anything of God's work. There are things we do, rescue missions and other things that are important in churches can do, but it's not to be human sympathy. And so what happened is he saw their toils, their working condition, their hardships, and the impulse of pity was really strong in him. But you cannot survive in the impulse of pity. When we were in Colombia, there were a number of teams that came from America. These were teams from the assemblies. And there had been one in Bogota and one in Medellin, and there had been one in Barranquilla and one in Bucaramanga and another in Barranquilla. Part of those teams were two-year teams. These are young people or others who took 2 years of their time from their job or schooling to come to Colombia and work on these teams. By the way, the missionaries were Juanes, is Gary and Vivian Michael. They were on one of these teams. I met them early. People on this team looked around and they saw the poverty and they saw other things in the country. And many of them looked at these sort of things and said, I'm not even going to go home after these 2 years. I'm going to write my assembly and I'm going to tell them I'm going to stay and ask them for commendation. And they were really feeling bad for the Colombians. But they had this thing. And some of them, when their elders wrote them and said, look, we'd like you to come home, tell us about what was going on and what's on your mind. Some of them got huffy. They really got huffy, some of these kids did. And some of them just didn't want to do it, weren't going to. Some of them even left the assembly. There were other people, they had put aside some things and they're eager to work. The group of people there I knew was great. Billy Loud, his dad came with his mom. He was a speech therapist and he came for the 2 years. Harv Rogers, a vice principal of high school basketball, he came. All of them had to lay aside what they were doing. And Kurt Ruby, a big farm and a school bus company, and on, these people came. And they made decisions about what the needs of the Colombian were to get the gospel out. Anyway, what you have with Moses is, to me, it sprang largely from human sympathy. And the next thing, I think it was premature, just because you have a feeling you want to do something. And you can see how you can do it. Does not mean that God is necessarily going to move everything in front of you, put you in there, let you achieve. He has to work. And what he needed to do is humble Moses, right? Moses had to be humble. Now, God's time for delivery wasn't there. It was still 40 years. So it was premature. And it was also executed in the thing that probably waylaid us the most. It was executed in human strength on the basis of Moses' knowledge, basis of Moses' ability, maybe his connection with some people. Moses might have had a lot of things figured out about how to do this. But it was based on human strength. He was always accustomed to having his own way. That's what I said. And so God is going to put him through this, and God is going to teach him. But another thing, while he was looking so sure about it, he was apprehensive in judgment of other people. Actually, took over this one, you know, that one. And there was a strangeness about this. He looked this way. So he looked this way, that way, and that's not how you do God's work. You go in and you go by faith and you do it and you work this and you don't look around all the time to see whether somebody is approving or not approving or this or that. You do the work. That sustained people, and it certainly sustained Moses during the 40 years. It sustained Richard, Gerald, and me during some of our tough times. We're there, we have a gospel to preach, there's work to do. People are coming in and telling us, well, maybe your methods aren't right. Maybe you need some church growth methods, church growth principles. At that time, we didn't think a lot about them either way. But my point is, there's always some suggestion that there must be some kind of method to get it done. So Moses away, and he's going to be there for 40 years. And faith is only possible when we're on God's plan and stand on his promise. So what you're having here is you're having God making this man a man of faith. And part of it was seeing the needs of people, understanding he might do something about it, knowing he could be part of it, but not being ready. You see, and not relying on God, thinking that every passion and sympathy and human strength was what is needed to do this. So this is one of the things Moses was going to face. And you and I know those years back in the wilderness were going to be really interesting years. And the consequences of his choices cost him fleeing and running. And it's my view, I can't prove it, but my view, because it's human, that when he sat there, the backside of the desert, in one sense, he was quite content. He married, had two children, and a sheep farm. But being human and having done something that he did and failing like that, he must have thought about it a lot. A lot. You and I often take time to think about things that we've done. We wonder if we would have done it this way, if we would have done better, and our attitude to whatever. So Moses, while he was in the back of the desert, must have done a lot of thinking. I wake up sometimes in the morning when I'm involved in ministry and something's on my mind from before. And I think we can only go back and apologize to that person. I can only say something. I can only let them know that my motive. I thought my motive was right. But it can't be done. And this are the things that come up. And I think when they come up, the Holy Spirit is teaching you, even though you think of the past, he teaches you now. See? Humility, meekness. And you can see where in Philippians chapter 2, where Paul talks about humility, he speaks of the humility of Christ. He gave himself, humbled himself. And then right after that, he said to the Philippians, they need to humble themselves as well. The example is Christ. So, the start of Moses' life is interesting. And I'm not going through other things because they were done very well, very thorough. I want to pick up then next week with Moses and Israel in the wilderness. This was a great test of leadership, great test of spiritual qualities. It was a time where Israel in the wilderness, and we see humanity, Christian believers, followers of God, moaning and griping and moaning, groaning, grumbling before God, never happy with what he gives. And Moses having to face this, and we see Moses showing himself at times in great need of God's grace and mercy. Thank you, Father, for the life of Moses. We read about the little baby, and then the next version we see that when he was a man, he made decisions to serve. And we know that these decisions had to do with the pleasures of the world, the riches of the world, the things of the world, all the things that made him feel important. God, give us a vision. And we ask you in that vision for our city or our chapel, help us to see that in some way there's something for us to do, something where we can be involved. And help us not to run headlong, but if you teach us lessons along the way, teach us to be more humble and loving and tender. We thank you and we ask you to do that, to make us better followers of you and workmen in your vineyard. And thank you in Jesus' name.